Welcome to Rev Up Your Potential with Hilda Gann, the podcast where entrepreneurs, business leaders, and HR professionals share tips, strategies, and trends in their area of expertise. They also talk about their successes and struggles along their career and business journey. If you love to learn through storytelling and find people fascinating, join us. Welcome to another episode of Rev Up Your Potential with Hilda Gann. Today, my guest is Joseph K. Muscat. He is the founder and neurodiversity inclusive practitioner. His company, Joseph K. Muscat Consulting, is focusing on neurodiversity. I'm looking forward to our conversation as we talk about neurodiversity. Welcome, Joseph.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So that word, neurodiversity, let's talk about that first. People may not have heard what is that and what does it mean? Can you talk about what is neurodiversity and what are neurotypicals, which is the other end of that, neurodiversity, neurotypicals?
Well, let's first understand the origin of the word neurodiversity. The term neurodiversity was coined by Judy Singer in 1997 as she was creating a paper in her doctorate to understand the different types of diversities that are out there, as well as trying to understand her own particular family history of neurodiversity. And as well, she was also relaying it to biodiversity. So let's break that down and explain that. For the first example, when we take a look at neurodiversity and we break down that word, neuro means brain and diversity means that we all think differently. When she was trying to compare it to the biodiversity, she was comparing it in the aspect that every animal, insect, and so forth had its place and they all worked together in unison in regards to whatever that environmental biobalance is. And trying to take that principle and apply it towards neurodiversity and understanding that we all think and perform differently. Now, when we break that down even further to understand that, neurodiversity has expanded into including other types of terminology. So it's become an umbrella. So that now brings down to identifying particular individuals who identify themselves as neurodivergents. And those are individuals who have dyslexia, ADHD, Tourette's, dyscalculia, dyslexia, and so forth. Now, when we compare to neurotypicals, neurotypicals is what is seen as being normal.
Yeah.
Or that's debatable. I would say what is normal. But when we look at it from that perspective, neurotypicals in actuality is another type of diversity. It happens to be the current dominant diversity of society.
Yeah. And I think that key word is the dominant versus the minority, if you want to call it, is the opposite.
Precisely. So when we take a look at society and society systems that have been established, it's been created and designed by and for neurotypicals. So anybody who falls outside of the neurotypical spectrum will be neurodiverse.
Right, right.
And those are the two distinctions.
I can't remember if you said it or not, but did you share the autism spectrum as part of the neurodiverse?
I believe I did, but if I hadn't, okay. Thank you.
I just want to make sure because, I mean, you did say ADHD, and people would click onto that, but I don't know that they heard the autism spectrum, which includes Asperger's, but it is now officially part of the autism spectrum.
That's correct.
So today we really are talking about people who are neurodivergent. So tell us a little bit about your company. You said you are a neurodiversity inclusion practitioner. Tell us more about what your consulting business does.
Well, to understand that, let's go back a little bit into a little bit of my past.
Sure.
I know you're going to be asking questions even more in depth to that, but let's just go into understanding how the business came into being. I've been a professional photographer for 20 plus years. And ever since leaving the education system and running my own business, I've always had challenges because of my neurodiversity. And whenever I try to find support out there, despite my accomplishments and successes, everything out there was geared towards children because it was seen as a childhood adversity.
Yeah.
So there was really no place as an adult for me to go to. And I know I'm not alone in this aspect. Mm-hmm. So later on, I entered the workplace and working for various companies where I've had various opportunities, and I still face greater challenges because the workplace didn't understand what neurodiversity was. They didn't know how to include them or provide reasonable accommodations. And there was always, unfortunately, an unnecessary friction. So, and again, I went out looking for support. And again, there was no support. It took me a very long time to find someone who could provide me support, provide me particular guidance. And it's around that time that I began to formalize and realize that there something needs to be done.
Yeah.
So I had formed my consulting business in regards to provide that support and awareness to the business community, to employers and managers, and understanding that they are already employing neurodivergents, and they're also leaving a lot of neurodivergents outside and not giving them an opportunity to come into the workplace.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the business comes into play, bringing awareness and bringing management training to employers and to middle to top level management, and understanding what neurodiversity is, as well as the colleagues. And part of that is, as well is also communicating that to individuals who are entrepreneurs, who are high-achieving entrepreneurs, but who are also neurodivergent and having struggles in managing their business because of their neurodiversity.
When were you diagnosed as... And I guess, is it a specific, are you on the autism spectrum or are you an ADHD or?
Well, that's a good question. So I'll be honest, this will be the second time I've ever shared this particular story. It's been about a year since I shared a full fledged of what the story is. I was diagnosed at a very young age with a number of neurodiversities. And in fact, the diagnosis didn't really come into play until grade one, around 6 years old, is when they usually do diagnosis in Canada. I was actually supposed to fail kindergarten, despite the fact that I had a very outgoing, creative spirit, but I was supposed to. I did end up failing grade one. Now, when we talk about how the system at that time treated neurodiversity in that particular time period, they didn't actually recognize what neurodiversity was. And they would usually put people in a very general category, as in it having a particular learning disability.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame teachers, but I do blame the system, because the system didn't know how to support individuals who were neurodivergent. So they placed the responsibility onto the student by failing them, which I don't think, know was not the right solution to do. They should have adapted to the student rather than punishing the student because they thought and performed differently.
And I think that's the neurotypical world that, well, you didn't fit, so let's make you do it again and maybe you'll get it this time.
Right, because they're coming from the principle of integration rather than inclusion. And when you come from the principle of inclusion, then that's the principle of you're trying to adapt to the individual rather than the integration, forcing the individual to integrate to that particular system.
And that's part of accommodation, right? That inclusivity is listening, understanding uniqueness, and accommodating rather than trying to force people to fit into whatever that mold is, whether it's an organization or a school or whatever.
Precisely. And part of that issue is when you take a look at integration, is that what you're doing is that you're focusing on the individual's challenges and making that the issue of concern rather than trying to figure out how to support those challenges and at the same time focusing on their strengths. So yes. as a yes. result, many neurodivergents, myself included, didn't understand what their strengths were.
Okay. So, and how would you at that early age, really?
Right. But at the same time, the education system and teachers were supposed to be able to understand that.
Yeah.
And again, I don't blame teachers because at the end of the day, the teachers are a product of the system. So they're being right. trained in how and what the system tells them and what and how things should be. And also as well, you know, teachers are taught how to create a lesson plan, not how to individualize particular lessons for how people, how their students learn differently. So it's more of a melting pot perspective rather than a multicultural perspective in regards to education and how we educate individuals. So my proper diagnosis, to get to the answer of the question, is actually visual motor, visual perception, working memory. And it wasn't until actually the last 4 years that I got a new diagnosis added on top of that, which is being dyslexic.
Wow.
And yeah. I would argue, now you notice, first of all, there that there's a lot of co-occurrence. So when there is one type of neurodiversity, let's say in my case, dyslexia, there will be other types of neurodiversities associated with that.
Right.
So for
right.
example, dyslexics, about 40 to 60% of them are also ADHD. Or if we go to autistic individuals, they're not. Some of them are not just autistic. They're autistic, dyslexic, dyscalculia, and ADHD. So there's always a combination of neurodiversities.
Right.
So we need to, when we take a look at neurodiversity, we cannot look at it as being single silos. In actuality, we have to take a look at it as being co-occurrences. Where there is one, there's going to be another. So when we talk about just a very brief explanation of what all of that really means, when we take a look at visual perception, that means that it's how I identify with what I see.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about visual motor, it is in regards to identifying with what I see with the proper motor action. So if we go to visual perception, if I'm reading something, the letters or numbers might become mixed up. When it comes to visual motor, if I'm trying to copy off a notebook or back in those days, a chalkboard, I may not be able to write everything correctly. Then comes working memory, which relates into being able to recall the information,
mm-hmm.
being able to follow instructions and follow the sequencing of those instructions. And then, of course, when we get into dyslexia, there are various degrees. And that's the other thing we have to take into account when we take a look into neurodiversity in general. There are various degrees. So, for example, in dyslexia, an extreme degree is having when you're not being able to read because the letters and numbers become really mixed up. In my case, I can read, but I read at a slow pace and I have difficulty with comprehension, which also relates back to working memory.
Right.
I can write, but again, due to dyslexia and working memory and visual perception, spelling and grammar for me is out the door.
Okay. So all of these challenges, this journey really has led you to say, we need things for people once they get out of the system where we're supporting children and families to how do we support adults? And adults in the working world, adults in life. And that's where you decided to start this company. Is that correct?
That's precisely correct. When we take a look what happens to a student who's identified. So now, you notice I said a student who is identified.
Right, right.
There's a certain percentage of students who are identified, and there's mm-hmm. a certain percentage of students or individuals who are not identified.
Okay.
So especially now since in the current generation, we're seeing a lot of older individuals getting late diagnosis in life.
Yep.
So if they've been properly identified, then they're provided in the education system a lot of support. So they may have for say dyslexics, they may have someone, I forget what you call it now, a pen reader that will help them read texts and read it to them. Or they may have someone who can help them write their notes. So yeah. They have support.
Note takers, yep.
Yeah. And that would continue on into post-secondary. But once they leave the education system and even post-secondary, all that support goes away. So it's like, as if the rug has been pulled from underneath them.
I remember a study that was out, I think in Mississauga, where once they identified them early and they started to support them, they found that the communication social skills of these neurodivergents was actually not far behind the neurotypicals, because they were taught how to. They were creating the recipe on how to communicate with people, because when you don't know, when you don't discover, and oftentimes social interaction and looking at people and seeing their responses is not there. So it just continues and perpetuates. But I love the study where saying when we support people who are neurodivergent to learn how to communicate, they actually are close to their age typical people, students. So I think when we can intervene and support, it really can make a difference. But for those, as you said, undiagnosed, it is a little bit more of a challenge, especially when you reach that age where you're out in the workforce or post-secondary and post-university.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And it becomes a confidence and self-esteem issue.
Yeah.
And you will find that a lot of neurodivergents will suffer from anxiety and self-esteem, or even learned helplessness, because they will have had teachers and colleagues or family members tell them that they wouldn't be able to do particular tasks or go into a particular profession because of their particular neurodivergence. And what happens is, once that support is gone, and that's the catch. No one really, part of the learned helplessness aspect to something that I suffered from is that I was told when I was in school is that once you get into the real world, you're not going to have the support. And that's not true. But
right. But that's scary.
It is scary. But because I believed in it, and I know many others who believed in it, when you're offered support, you reject it because you're told that you're not going to need it. So when I was in university, I was offered particular supports. Some of them I took, a lot of them I did not take, because I'm thinking I have to be independent. I have to be on my own. Because when I get into the workforce, when I'm starting my own business, when I'm working for someone, I'm not going to have that support. But in actuality, that became a detriment to my performance and my outcome in running my business and or working for someone. So that rug has been pulled out. And when individuals either become self-employed, they have to build that support structure. Or when they're working for someone, they're trying to find that support structure. But the workplace, again, not understanding what neurodiversity is, not knowing how to support them, not having managers be trained in neurodiversity, knowing how to communicate with them and how to provide reasonable accommodations, it starts becoming a roadblock for a lot of neurodivergents. So, for example, if we get into statistics, ADHDers, 30% clash in the workplace, 60% by themselves unemployed. If we look at dyslexics, they're 5 times more likely to be unemployed. And then, of course, this leads into difficulty in trying to find a new job or going into an interview, masking means they're doing a lot of hiding of their particular challenges because they don't want the employer to find out. There'd be a fear of disclosure because my dyslexia is now coming in and working memory of trying to recall the words. There's been studies done and research done that when someone has disclosed, either tasks start being taken away, they get denied promotions or raises. The lack of confidence comes into that individual by their manager or their employer because of they have disclosed. So it becomes very fearful of those individuals and traumatizing to whether to disclose or not disclose. And of course, it becomes even more traumatizing when they find themselves unemployed, trying to support themselves. And that's why a lot of neotypicals end up starting their own businesses. And when they end up starting their own businesses, they do the opposite of what the businesses have done to them. See, the businesses, I always argue, to be perfectly honest, I always argue that what happens in the classroom, there is a direct line to what happens in the workplace. So the stigma that happens in the classroom happens in the workplace. And what happens is, as I stated earlier, in this education system, they focus on the weaknesses. Same thing happens in the workplace. They focus on the weaknesses rather than focusing on the strengths. So when an individual, which is what I'm going through and many others are going through, leave a workplace and start their own business, they start focusing on their strengths and building support structures around their challenges.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of neurodivergents end up starting a lot of successful businesses. And I think it's at this point, it's important to point out a particular stat, which is it is estimated that 4 out of 20 students are neurodivergent. So if that's the case, then that means that 4 out of 20 customers are neurodivergent, 4 out of 20 employees are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
And 4 out of 20 entrepreneurs are neurodivergent. So people are already interacting and doing business with neurodivergent individuals.
So two things. It really aligns with the philosophy and the concept I created, RevUp, where if you treat people with respect, look at them as equals, value who they are, and then, this is the key piece, look at the uniqueness of people and tap into that potential. Don't look at the uniqueness and then try to take their challenges of their uniqueness and bring those up, but look at the gifts that people have. And I think this is what we need to do more to create a more inclusive environment. I appreciate that you have shared so much about your personal journey and your desire to create a company that will help business owners create a more accepting, divergent workplace and understanding people and fostering that. So again, in my concept of RevUp, this is what it's about. It's taking people's uniqueness and seeing it and tapping into that. And your statistics, your picture that you painted of how we perceive neurodivergence. What advice do you have? You know, you've created this business because you want to connect with us, entrepreneurs, business owners, HR leaders, on how do we help foster a workplace, you know, create an inclusive work culture. Tips, strategies, or approaches, Joseph, that will help us.
Absolutely. And thank you for that. So I have two sets of principles. The first set of principles, what I call the neurodiversity inclusion principles. And they're centered around being people-centric. So that means that you're adapting to the individual. So what does that mean? By being people-centric, you're being flexible. You're identifying strengths. You're supporting challenges. You're being reflective. In other words, how would you want to be treated? And lastly, you're being patient. The most important thing is that you're being patient and identify the strengths, focus on their strengths, and understand how to support the challenges. Adapt to the individual through people-centric principles. The second set of principles is remove all barriers. Anything that's interfering with a person's ability to perform, remove those barriers. And that may very well be a person or manager. Again, focus on strengths and support challenges. Create an environment of inclusion. So understand the environment that you're in and ask yourself, is the environment that you're in inclusive for everyone or just for a particular set of people? And then lastly, create a sense of belonging.
Yes.
So focus on what the individual or group of individuals need and ensure that they're valued and that they know that they're valued.
I mean, these values so align with Rev Up and inclusivity. And it's not, you know, this is today we're diving in deep, like really deep on neurodiversity. But this idea, like a lot of companies now are adding the word B into diversity. So there's DEI, diversity, inclusion, equality or equity, and now belonging. So many people are saying that. And if we all could find it within ourselves, whether it's neurodivergency or if it's gender, LGBTQ, if we can include people, if we can be looking at their uniqueness and looking at equality, you know, and equality means we treat each others in a way that uplifts them and motivates. It doesn't mean everybody is painted by the same brush, but let's make that unique in the way we do it and adapt. So I really appreciate that. Now, you grew up in Canada and then you moved to Malta. How can people use your services from, you know, and I know you do have clients in Canada and I'm based in Canada. So I really want people around the world to understand the value of your services that they can use to help. So share some of that with us.
So what I do is a number of things. I obviously offer my speaking services to companies to help bring awareness. I also offer a number of training courses that I bring in towards helping train their management and their colleagues. I also, in addition to that, as I mentioned earlier, I consult and coach individuals, in particular neurodivergent entrepreneurs, on helping them make their workplace more inclusive for themselves as well as people that they employ. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. You know, so what advice would you give to managers who are, they sense that this person who may not be diagnosed, but they seem, you know, different. So they're thinking they're now that they're hearing me thinking they're neurodivergent. How can we help managers be more inclusive, be more open-minded, be more of an ally to people with neurodivergent neurodivergent situations, challenges? Maybe the challenges is the right word.
Well, the first thing is, of course, education. Mm-hmm. You know, many managers definitely have no understanding what neurodiversity is because companies don't train managers in a number of areas, but definitely not in understanding neurodiversity and understanding that their team is a wonderful rainbow of different perspectives and different diversities. And that, of course, is requiring to being able to adapt. So that, and in order to be able to adapt, they have to have that awareness. So the first thing to do is try to ask for neurodiversity training from your company so that way you can develop those skill sets. Otherwise, do homework and understand the different neurodiversities, because you need to be able to understand how different people think and perform. And if your job as a manager is to coach them and to guide them in the workplace, you need to know how they think and perform to be able to do that.
Yeah.
The second aspect to that is caution. And I say caution because it's not your place to diagnose individuals. Mm-hmm. It's very dangerous to do that. But it is your place to engage with them. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of ways in how you can engage with your team, your talent. That obviously starts with having a conversation. And that conversation obviously is not going into and saying, I think you might have dyslexia.
No.
Because that might obviously will put the individual in a very defensive approach.
Exactly.
Especially if either A, they are aware of their neurodiversity, but don't want you to know because they don't want to be stigmatized, afraid of disclosure, or they may not have been identified and don't want to be seen that way. So that's not how you approach it. What you want to approach it is in the process of having a conversation with them and saying, how can I help you?
Yes.
Obviously, point out, say that you're doing a great job. You're really strong in this particular area. I see you're having challenges in this area. How can I support you? Is there anything that you need from me? And that's the most important thing, and something that needs to become a habit, is asking, and first off, having engagement with them, but and second of all, asking those kind of questions. How can I help you? You can do check-in questions on a scale of 1 to 10. How is your day today? Mm-hmm. If it's a 10, hey, great. Why is it 10? If it's a 3, okay, what's a 3? What's going on? Yeah. How can I support you? And you don't have to answer. You know, sometimes managers think they need to be a fixer all the time.
Right.
Other times it's about just listening and just saying, whatever you need, I'm here to support you. And start having that conversation with them and make them feel comfortable where they can come to you and say, yes, I need to have this kind of support in this area, or I need to have this particular area of support, by having that dialogue.
And this is advice for all staff that you have, because each one of them has gifts. Each one of them may have challenges. And when a manager learns to connect with their employee and understand their uniqueness, their strengths, their challenges and nuances, that creates a healthier, stronger bond, a trust, and really helps people develop a sense of belonging, a sense of accomplishment, and a sense of worth and value in the organization. And I always talk about managers as being a pivotal point in an organization, and how they really, when they were in school, they learned how to talk. But when they get into their university or college days and they begin to specialize, they often are promoted because, number one, they have the technical skills of that core business. And they also have maybe the ability to organize and manage the projects, the budget. But oftentimes, core competency in assessing whether to promote somebody doesn't include how good is their people skills, how good is their emotional intelligence, their sense of empathy, their ability to motivate people. You know, what I call non-technical, people call them soft skills, but they're really not. You know, that's a misnomer, because they're hard to get to learn how to do. So when managers really develop that what I'll call people leadership skills in managing and leading their people, that's when they become more effective. And your advice, your strategies are so bang on for helping the neurotypicals or the neurodivergents and for all their staff. So thank you very much for that advice.
I may add to that.
Sure, please.
If I may. You hit on something very key here, and I know I mentioned it a little bit earlier, which is the people skills. You notice at the end, it's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skill to be learned. And so let's pause there. You need to learn the skill.
Right.
And then, of course, you need to practice the skill in order to master the skill. So when we take a look at people skills, it's about being a leader, knowing how to communicate, being able to motivate and inspire. And as I mentioned earlier, coaching. A lot of managers don't see themselves as coaches.
Yeah.
When in reality, they are coaches. Mm-hmm. And being a coach is going back to those leadership skills, those communication skills, knowing how to engage, being able to identify strengths and motivate and inspire their team. So those are skills that need to be developed, trained, and practiced.
So bang on. Thank you for really reinforcing that. You know, it's not just learning, it's practicing and continuously learning to be better. Imagine what it would be like to have a boss who really understood me, who coached me, guided me, and helped bring me from, you know, a new graduate to a seasoned professional that's a great manager, because I learned from the best and I evolved. So I really appreciate that emphasis on not just the skill, but the education, the practice, and the coaching. So that's really good. Joseph, we could talk all day on this, but I think what we've done is really helped people understand more about neurodivergent people and the value of us as entrepreneurs, as managers, and HR professionals in understanding how we can work with them. I in Canada, we have a program called Specialist Intern, and this was started by somebody in Sweden because he had a son who was a neurodivergent. And he was worried about when his son graduated and went to school and then tried to get a job, who was going to hire him? How were they going to be accepting? And so he created a program that would help educate business owners that these people who are neurodivergent actually can be really valuable, loyal employees, because oftentimes they have a gift for some kind of specialization. And then because they really benefit from a routine and not having too much like change on them, that they become very loyal employees because they want to be in a company that knows them, understands them, and that they can come to work. So you'll find in these companies that have created these specialist intern programs that when they bring on these staff as hires, they are really good at what they do. So quality work. Their sick time is very low, and their loyalty is high. So they'll be the people that will be there for many, many years to come. So it is taking root in Canada. Many of the major banks, companies like IBM have brought in the specialist intern program and really found it valuable. And I wanted to share that. Is there something similar that you see in your own experiences that help companies with this kind of bring on an employee and see the value of it?
There are many third-party companies that do that. Microsoft has a very, not third-party, but they've created their own internal structure for bringing on neurodivergents, as well as other companies do that. So there's definitely a lot of companies that do that. I do that from a different perspective in what I do in bringing the management training and awareness and speaking. So there's definitely a lot of that happening. And it's definitely, you're starting to see more companies since the pandemic, because the pandemic has really changed perspective in understanding the workforce and who employers employ.
Is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners about what they can do more to help get comfortable themselves or bring on people into their workplaces? Anything you want to share that we haven't covered so far?
Sure. There's one thing I like to share. When we talk about when companies look into bringing in new talent into their organizations, they're often thinking of cultural fit. Mm-hmm. Does that person fit to the culture of the company? And there's a new way of thinking that, which is cultural add. Does that individual add something to our company that we haven't thought of before? Bringing in new perspectives, where basically they may be the teacher teaching us rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
When you're looking at whether internalizing or bringing in new people outside, not think of cultural fit, start thinking about cultural adding that diversity. Mm-hmm. Especially when we take a look at, when we go back to management, they're looking at hiring one type of prototype, where you end up having more of a homogeneous team.
Yeah.
When you start thinking about cultural add, you're adding a new perspective to that homogeneous team, where people are going to be asking different kinds of questions. They're going to be coming up with different kinds of perspectives and ideas. Yep. And in fact, when you start doing that and having that cultural add perspective, where you're now not hiring prototype A anymore, but you're also hiring prototype B, companies become more competitive because of that.
Yes. And I think more so now than ever before, we are trying to encourage that diversity, inclusivity, and help seeing that the benefit of that is the more diverse an organization is, the more responsive they are to the future. You know, it's homogeneous is not future-proofing. Homogeneous is more status quo, whereas diversity and add is, I love that word, cultural add, really creates future-proofing, because now you're more nimble, you're more open to change, and you're moving with the future as opposed to staying with the past, incremental. We could talk all day on this. I really appreciate so much information that you've given to open the eyes of entrepreneurs, business owners, and HR professionals to what neodiversity is and the value add of helping them be part of an organization, because there would be so much benefit to that. What's coming up next for you, Joseph?
Well, right now I'm working on a couple of projects. I'm going to be doing some management training in the UK next week, as well as some localized management training in the week after that. In the upcoming months, I'll be organizing or participating in helping organize a seminar locally here in Malta for bringing more awareness and education to businesses about neodiversity.
Great. I love your advocacy. I love having hosted you to help really bring this idea and educate others in terms of what neodiversity is. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, thank you for that. So there's obviously my website, and at my website, you can download a free neodiversity policy template.
Cool.
In addition to that, I have a
podcast. And what is your website?
Website? Yeah, thank you. JosephKmuscat.com.
Okay, gotcha.
And then there's, of course, you can always find me on LinkedIn. And then there's also my podcast. And my podcast is Take a Leap and Transform a Neodiversity Journey. And on my podcast, I talk to the business community and bring that neodiversity awareness to the business community, as well as solutions and how to be inclusive to neodiverse talent. And I bring on guest speakers, business professionals, directors, and founders of companies who come on and talk about how they did it to become more inclusive in their business.
Which sounds so cool. So cool. And I know you and I are exchanging our podcast because we both feel we have the value to add to our prospective audiences. So I'm looking forward to coming on and being a part of your podcast in the near future. So thank you very much for coming on today, Joseph, and sharing your journey, your wealth of knowledge, and your advocacy in this area of neurodiversity. Thanks.
Thank you.
So if you loved what you heard today, I certainly loved and learned a lot, particularly culture ed, coaching, and support, then give it a thumbs up. Give it two thumbs up for Joseph, and then subscribe, because each week I bring on different people to share different aspects of life, people's journeys, as well as their area of expertise. So thanks, and thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you for tuning in to Rev Up Your Potential with Hilda Gann. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to our podcast on YouTube and Spotify to stay up to date on our latest episodes. For HR tips, news, and strategies, or if you're interested in being a guest on our podcast, visit our website at peoplebrightconsulting.com.